Hi, Favi Fav here with a special message before we start the show. Men in power are working overtime to control women's bodies, women's lives, and women's futures. Abortion access, freedom from sexual violence, and economic security are key to building a world where all women can thrive. The National Alliance to End Sexual Violence and the National Partnership for Women and Families are standing together to take our power back. Learn more at nationalpartnership.org/standtogether. That's nationalpartnership.org/standtogether. Now, one more time for the people in the back. nationalpartnership.org/standtogether. Tell them Latinos Who Lunch sent you. All right, let's start the show. Hi, this is... Oh, wait. How do I start it? Oh, yeah. Okay, got it. Hi, I'm Favi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are Latinos Who Lunch, the podcast where we talk about important things like...
Ross, cross-dress for less.
Hello, hello, hello.
How
are you, Babelito?
I am a little drunk. I am not going to lie. Thanks to our friends Coca and Greñas, they made us the most amazing micheladas.
Yes. Let's hear it. We are in Austin. We are in Austin, Texas right now, hanging out with some of our good friends. And I'm just going to get right to it.
Go for it.
We are here with the one, the only, Jose Villalobos.
Hey guys, what's up?
Hi, oh my gosh, what an honor.
Qué honor.
Ay, ya sabía, güey, que iba a prender el micrófono y te ibas a poner nervioso.
Ay, es que sí me pongo nervioso, como que me da pena.
No se apene, mijo, no se apene.
I don't know, when there's big things right in front of me, I get real nervous.
Oh, girl.
Como and si no tuvieras práctica.
And it's right by my mouth.
That's not what I've seen.
Ay, ay. It's so nice to finally meet you.
Yes.
We met yesterday and we hang out and we saw some amazing performances in this Fusebox festival.
Oh, yeah. So first of all, shout out to Fusebox because... Fusebox Festival here in Austin, Texas brought Latinos Who Lunch out here and they helped us go to UT and do a live podcast. So shout out to everybody that went to that show. We met some amazing people, Laura Gutierrez and Jesus Valles. I really want to have them on the show in the future. And thank you, Jose, for coming to our live taping there. Or we didn't tape. We just had a discussion. Yeah. Our live podcast for the people that were there. You had to be there.
Era el cuidandero de las mochilas.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Curandero, güey.
Cuidandero. ¿Cuál curandero?
But, and then Fusebox had us do a live episode at the festival, at the Hub, which I did an installation on this morning. We did it about white passing Latinidad or Latino identity, which was an interesting conversation. And anyway, shout out to everybody from Fusebox. And shout out to Robert Jackson Harrington. Don't call him Bobby Robert. And to Michael Anthony Garcia, who we also had on the show, who has been such an amazing host here in Austin. Okay.
And also thank you to Coca y Greñas, who are allowing us to use their beautiful, beautiful, beautiful home to record this episode. Because when I knew that Jose was going to come here, I was like, we got to interview him because we've been talking to you forever. We've been fans of your art forever, so we're gonna get into it. Before that, tell everybody what you do.
Oh, no, wait, we gotta talk about food.
Ah, yeah. Simón, Simón,
acabamos de comer.
Pues es que la michelada me...
Our tía Coca just made us an amazing meal.
Oiga, tía, las tortillas. Las tortillas ya se acabaron.
So, we had this fideo seco con chorizo. I had... like four tacos.
Oh, bitch, hold on. Let me say this.
Go for it.
So I've been vegetarian since January.
Okay.
Pero
you think you're better than us or what?
No, girl, hold on. Let me get to it. But greñas, this morning I nomás olí el huevo con chorizo. Girl,
y caíste en un abismo de pasión.
Y Y luego le dije a Coca, I've been vegetarian. She's like, oh. She just looks at me. She's like, oh. Y pues no me trae los tacos de huevo con chorizo. So I broke the diet. So this house is a devil. Very bad influence.
Mm-hmm.
We're alcoholics, too.
Mm-hmm. Well.
But it was very good. It was tasty as fuck.
Yeah. So what else we ate?
And then Coca made nopales con vegetales. That was, ooh, that rhymes. And tortillas hecho a mano. Pues, you know, Coca, only excellence. Yeah. And
ahí la tenemos a la pobre.
And then black beans, because she knew I was coming. The guatemalteco was in the house. And
French green salsa con tomatillo.
Ooh, French?
Fresh.
Oh, man. I was like, how was it French? Le pusieron crema, okay? And so, and some micheladas Monterrey style. Wait, Coca, can you come up here real quick?
Yes,
and
please
just,
explain.
And tell us what a Monterrey style michelada is.
Of course. I need this to be like out in the open, and I need this to be corrected. Like, good michelada is with their Worcestershire sauce.
Worcestershire?
That thing. in Spanish, it's salsa inglesa.
Uh-huh.
Jugo Maggi, limón, tabasco, y cerveza y sal. Pero sí, el mix se llama petróleo, because it's so dark.
Oh.
So it's like oil. And so if it's red, it doesn't come from the north. It's like a weird chelada mix, Tex-Mex thing. Because, yeah. It has to be really,
so it's
really
brown, guys.
Delicious.
It's brown.
Like us. Yes, support brown cocktails. Yes. Okay, Jose.
Yes.
Let's talk,
yes.
Baby. Tell me everything.
¿Qué quieres saber?
Who are you? Where did you come from? Where are you going? Who is your daddy?
I'm going places.
And what does he do?
Mamas. <Just kidding. laughs> No. So I'm actually from La Frontera. I was born and raised in El Paso.
Yes, Chuco Dome.
El Chuco. However, a lot of my upbringing was between Ciudad Juarez and El Paso. So it's like back and forth kind of day. A lot of family still lives in Ciudad Juarez. My mom migrated from, she was born in Durango, migrated. She made her way up to Ciudad Juarez, working at I am telling my mom's story, not even mine, ¿tú crees? Anyways.
That's fine. Just tell us all the trauma, girl. We're here for it.
So my mom was a stay in maid at the age of 13, cleaning houses. So that's kind of how she got her way into the United States. She tells some crazy ass stories. Like, her tuvo una jefa,
uh-huh,
que le decían la pirata porque
le faltaba un ojo.
Yeah, she had an eye patch. Right? No, hold on. But the reason why they would
and
call
a peg
her
peg leg,
bitch. But the reason why they would call her that is because they would lock her up in the basement.
Who, your mom?
My mom, uh-huh. So, like, she would clean the house during the day, and then when she was done, she would get locked in the basement. And
she lived there in the basement?
Yeah, she would live there, like maybe
they would literally lock her in?
Right, uh-huh. They would lock her in.
¡Qué pedo, güey! Uh-huh.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so my mom tells me all crazy kind of stories, like, que la pasaban por el en la cajuela de los carros. Like, she would go in the trunks of cars to go across the state lines. To go clean houses because it was going to be a good amount of money.
They
that
didn't want
get.
Her friends to know about her because she was undocumented or something, or what?
Well, not her. No, like her bosses. Like,
oh,
right. So,
I see.
So she would have a point in time which she had to travel outside of Texas,
mm-hmm,
and they would put her in the trunk.
Wow.
So that they wouldn't see her. Anyway, so my mom met my father in Ciudad Juarez. My dad he was born in San Benito, Texas, but all his life he se creó en Zacatecas, en el rancho. And then they kind of met each other there. And then they had me after all these, you know, four children.
Y valió madre.
Y valió madre. Yo me quedé con nada. Porque all my siblings say, you know, like they took everything. So I just had all the trauma. That's what they gave me.
And you're gay, pa acabar de fregar.
Okay, yeah.
Girl. Qué desgracia.
No, hombre. No. Te digo. No, no. Pero,
sorry. I saw that hurt a little bit. You're like, you got to joke about it, girl, because if not, we'd be crying about it.
I want to cry right now.
Dale.
No, so I was born and raised in El Paso, Ciudad Juarez. It's funny because being over here, talking to a lot of people with like the fuse box and people who I know, it kind of became a joke, right? Pablito, where we're like talking about like, oh, it is El Paso. The first thing that comes to mind is, what high school did you go to? For some odd reason.
Right, yeah.
There's such a rivalry. Like, that's all they have over there.
Yeah, I was going to say, lack of identity. Yeah. You have to go through the high school thing.
So it is so funny. You know, like I grew up in the west side of El Paso, which is like predominantly white and rich, you know, a lot of Jew this people too, you know. Uh-huh. So, and then you go and they have like huge ass houses and stuff like that. But it's funny because I grew up in a mobile home, you know, like it's like this small niche in the community and it's all like broken down. Like it's literally like a little U-turn. It's like a cul-de-sac and it's just like mobile homes. That's where I was born and raised or grew up. But so that's where I came from. I went to high school in Coronado High School. I fucking
Preppy.
Girl, I hated that high
school. What's the mascot?
The Thunderbird.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I went to Coronado. I hated it. I felt like I didn't belong. But aparte de eso, like I just didn't like it. Like I didn't like. So I dropped out. And then I ended up going back to a charter school. And then I ended up graduating a year early. And it was Paso del Norte. So after that, I actually moved to San Antonio in 2008 with un pinche cargo. You know what I mean? Like there was like...
Un pinche qué?
Cargo. Like there cargo. Was like so much weight that I was carrying that I still brought from El Paso. And things kind of just like... I was working for a corporate business, like having to do with like medications. So I would work for pharmacists and stuff like that. And then I ended up like going to school. Uh-huh. I was going to become an English major. And then I took my art class, my art course. And I was like, I've always loved art. I was like, this is what I want to do.
So you were not trained as an artist. You just got into it.
Right.
That I didn't know.
Yeah. So once I... went to school those first 2 years, I kind of just started to really get into the arts and I kind of delve into a lot of like things with the artwork. Of course, when you're going to school, like you don't know, like you're just kind of like experimenting with a lot of things. And then after that, it's kind of just kind of, there was a moment in my life in which I came out and that's where like my work, where I'm at now in my work is like,
it's all about your queer identity.
Right.
A lot of it, yeah.
Right. Queer, Latino, border.
But what I like about, what I love about your artwork is that you are decentering the narrative of queer Latinos in the United States and you place them in the border, which has its own series of complications, you know?
Yeah.
Something that is that's never talked about and it's something that I admire a lot.
It's funny because the culture in the border is a lot different than any other places, right? So, la cultura en la frontera es más conservada y luego es más, es más machista, right? So, we have the conservative here, like in the South, right? But when you're talking about the border town, it's a little different because I think this is what I believe. What ends up happening is that a lot of traditional people who are trying to migrate north, right, kind of make it a stationary place and they stay there, right? So it's like a bunch of people who like go by tradition and like are just raised in tradition. So I feel that especially with them, you know, con los Mexicanos, like the machismo is like super predominant in that. So yeah, so what I do with my work is I use these symbols, right? So I work with found objects. So what I do with these found objects is I deconstruct them in several or different types of ways. But in the deconstruction, I either reconstruct them using different materials or I embellish them, right?
So like to explain one of the pieces, the first piece that I remember seeing on social media from you was I deconstructed Vaquero Bota and the different layers of La Suela you separated them and then you connected them almost to look like a Rococo Mexican lamp.
Right. Okay.
And with all these fringes and all these flowers. So you took this symbol of Norteño machismo.
Right.
And you made it into this like queer thing.
Right. So, and all these, like, you know, all these objects are a symbol of power. It's not only like a symbol of like the culture itself, but if we look at like different like objects, right? Like I treat like la bota, right? So it's like this symbol of something that a man wears and who struts, and the sombrero as well. I use sombreros in my work a lot too. And for me, when these men are using these sombreros, it's like a crown. Right, but not only that, it also becomes like a performative attire. So
yeah, I mean, everything we wear, it's a performance. Yes,
right. So especially with, you know, like a man can be in his house and can be completely comfortable and can, you know, a little bit more relaxed, you know, for lack of better terms or other words, but as soon as that person puts on that sombrero, las botas y el cinto, and they step out that door, they become a completely different person. Right. And it becomes a performance in its own. So it's now this, it's this symbol as a person, like holding this power against other people, right? So I've seen it. I've experienced it in my life with my uncles, with, you know, grandparents, I want to say my father, because my dad was a little bit more... a little bit
rockero.
Era el punk. Era el punks. Pero era más retirado de todo eso. Pero, yeah, like, it's so weird. So what I do with all that, you know, like, I use these symbols that have all this meaning of power. And it's a masculine thing, right? So it's like this symbol that has been traditionally carried to have a masculine identity. And I deconstruct it and reconstruct it and embellish it to be a lot more flamboyant, to be a lot more like, there's like a feminine like kind of approach to the work.
Well, the interesting part to me is that you don't actually have to do that much to make those objects more feminine. Because when you think about a mariachi,
yeah,
like costume, mm-hmm. or like the wear, you know, like, yeah, those are some tight pants. Like, you know, you can see what everybody's working with.
okay,
like. I remember as a kid looking at Alejandro Fernandez like, damn. Know what I mean? Like, they are showing the goods. Mm-hmm. And so...
Vaquero wear is the same.
Vaquero wear is very similar in that way, is that, you know, it's...
Pues I nunca has oído entre más grande, más macho. Okay.
But it's like a utilitarian thing. Of course, you don't want loose pants if you're going to be a cowboy, because you don't want to get caught up on shit,
right?
You know, when you're working.
Yes.
But in turn, it's like...
It's performing gender.
Right, and you're absolutely making something that's traditionally feminine, like tight clothing and un tacón, and the, you know. Yeah.
What I don't understand sometimes is that, I mean, we see it all across, like bandas and all these, like, Mexican musical groups, right? And their outfits and their costumes, because they're costumes, right? They're a performing outfit. They can be bright colored. They can be shiny. They can have...
be pink even.
Yeah, like neon pink. They can be fringed. They can be rhinestoned. And it's okay because it's them wearing it, right? But as soon as a person who is gay dresses that way, you're seen through a different lens now. Mm-hmm. You're seen as a faggot, right? And that's... it's kind of like this weird dynamic.
But that's the history of fashion. Like, a lot of things that we consider femme, they were created for males. They were created for... it's just to enhance that, you know? And
yeah, I think I learned on Unravel, a fashion podcast, that the color pink wasn't feminine until the 20th century, 19th or 20th century, like... Before that, men used to wear pink all the time.
A lot of that shit changed during the Victorian era, too.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and even then, you know, with not only the work itself, but, and it's so funny because we're talking about the sense of fashion in clothing and stuff. What I do is I try to, for every opening, is I create an outfit. So I alter these Western attire to look feminine, especially if I'm doing a performance, right? So there's always this kind of sensibility of being aware of how I'm treating not only the objects, but also how I'm treating this attire and wearing it. And, like, kind of being more showy, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, more... pues para el show, hombre.
And then there's... So there's... You're a multidisciplinary artist. Yes. You do sculpture, and you also do performance.
Right.
Here in Latinos Who Lounge, we're not necessarily fond of performance, but every time I see performance art...
There's two performance artists in the room. You're bold, bitch.
That's all right. That's all right. I can defend my statement. However, every time I see one of your performances, I get it right away. That's, to me, a successful performance. Like, I don't have to think about it too much. Like, you are doing something, and you're carrying your message. And your message, right, it's tied to your sculpture. It's tied to your performance. It's like a whole entire body of work. And the same iconography that you use from your sculpture, you also use in your performances. So every time I see those posts, I get it right away. And it's fascinating because you seem to be carrying this very specific iconography, but you use it in so many ways that it's, right, become almost like an endless resource, which, yeah, is like, for example, just La Bota itself. That, right, that's something that you're exploiting in such different ways. Can you, yeah, talk a little bit more about the performance aspects of your art?
Yeah. I've always loved performance, right? Like, I just, not even diving into, like, before even becoming in or going into the art program when I was in school or whatever, I've always loved this aspect of performance. So it was either performance through film, performance through theater, performance through, music. There's this aspect of it. But for me, this sense of the performance, it's a cathartic thing. So, you know, it's sometimes you can't express certain things through, like, the visual art, right? Or, like, I can't put everything into just an installation. So for me, like, performance is an extension to the work. But for my performances, I've always said, and it's funny because you bring up, es que a veces la cagan alguna gente. Es que no, en serio, es que... I mean...
Go for it. Say it, say it, say
I'm
it,
just,
say it.
You know, for performance, like, you know, like, you can have, like, some sense of shit and, like, people don't understand it, yeah, right? I've always said that it's better being transparent, right, and for people to understand things, because that's this is why we're artists, because we're trying to reach the people who are not in the arts. So for me, well, at least for me as an artist, I'm conveying a message through my work, not for my fellow artists, not for, yes, they understand it and they get it, but this is for the social justice issue that's happening.
That's when an artist understands their audience. And that's something, right, that a lot of artists struggle with, understanding who your audience is. And without knowing who you're performing to, without knowing who you're making art to, it's hard to make, right, cohesive stuff. And what you end up doing is having this... And these sort of things that le hablan a la Virgen and shit, and nobody understands. And yes, you have the freedom to, like, express yourself.
Right.
And express yourself through your art, whatever the fuck you, right, want to do. But if you know exactly who your audience is, the results, in a way, are much more powerful, I think.
I always think it's interesting when I see video work and performance work. And my big thing is, like, I don't know if it's, like, an ego thing or, like, an audience thing, but, like, for performance and video art, like, I can walk into a museum and look at one of your sculptures, and I can stand there for 5 minutes, or I can just glance at it and walk away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then when you're performing or when you're making a time-based work, there's an expectation from the audience to sit there and watch you, or stand there and, yeah, watch you.
Mm-hmm.
That dynamic to me is sometimes uncomfortable. And
uncomfortable for what reason?
Because it's like, I feel like I'm at church sometimes. Like, I don't really want to be here, but I should.
Estás con la pierna así.
Yeah, I was like, come on, come on, come on. Like, is this for real? Are you really, yeah, making us sit through this? So, okay. I was like, it depends, right? Because there's been some video work that I've seen that's been like an hour-long video piece, and I can't stop watching it.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah,
I sit there and I watch it again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's when I'm thinking about accessibility and audience, I think about that too, because I'm like, who is the person that has the privilege and the time to go to a museum or go to a space and see that performance, and then for that artist to have the And for it to be an expectation for that person to stand right there and watch you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So there's like, there's also that dynamic on top of it.
Timing for me, I think timing is super important in many ways. But the way I treat time in my performances is, and I've been asked this before, is there a start or an end to your performances? And there is, right? The longest performance that I've done has maybe lasted 20 minutes. And that's because that involved like me getting dragged by a horse in a ranch and then like walking around with 70 pounds of bale of hay in my back, wearing high heels and unsteady grounds. Like, you know, like that's the longest performance I did. Shout out to Rigo and Janelle and Press House Gallery because I won a Contemporary Art Month Award last month. Yay. So
congratulations.
Gracias. And their parents ranch. So that's that specific performance was by invitation only. And Coca was there.
Y se posó a chillar la cabrona. Ay, Coca. She's a proud tía.
I hit her feelings, girl. No, pero I know. No, but that's been the longest performance I've done, and that was like 20 minutes, maybe. And it, you know, like my performances usually last maybe like 7 to 10 minutes.
So, for those who are not familiar with performance art, why don't you take us from the beginning to end? And I'm gonna put you in the spot here. I want you to talk about the piece where you were dragging the boots with all that weight. Okay. That is my favorite. I saw it for a second and I'm like, bitch, I get you. I know. So like explain a little bit of that from beginning to end so people know like the impact of some of these performances.
So in November, I was invited into a curation for Luminaria or Luminaria in San Antonio, Texas.
Yes, Jose.
Jose.
Yes, Jose Villalobos.
Right by the Alamo. But so I was, they curated me into the, it happens every year, but it's always a group of artists, international, you know, state, local, and it's all like installation and performance based. Last year I got, you know, I was accepted into it. I did two pieces. The one piece that you probably haven't seen is, a video piece where I'm actually dancing to like a bunch of like house music and like gay shit. You know what I mean? Like, well, I can't say gay shit, but girl,
you just did.
Uh-huh. Like Lady Gaga. Pero este, yes. I know, it's kind of like this. Taking this twist on what the, you know, how we see these men in this attire and like what's expected, like it's also like as far as like the music aspect of it. So we're expecting rancheras, banda music, right? And then kind of like dancing in this like get up, like super flamboyantly to like this music. And then I did the performance, the live performance piece was called La Carga de la Tradición.
Oof.
And, in that specific work, it's talking about the weight of tradition and how we're kind of expected to carry it, right, and deliver it.
So what do you do?
So what I did is I got a bunch of pairs of botas, norteñas. I call them norteñas, pero son, you know, like they're cowboy boots. But they're not just cowboy boots, right? Like we know which ones we're talking about here. But so I filled them up with concrete, and I want to say it was about a little over 250 pounds, right? And at the beginning of the performance, I have them standing in this kind of this spot, and I grab, you know, there's half and half, one half in one hand and one half in the other hand. They're tied to ropes, so like I bring them down, and I start to drag them across throughout all of the public, right? And it's like pulling this weight and trying to pull it. And I usually don't train for anything like this, or I usually don't do practice. You know what I mean? The only practice for performances that I do is just to make sure that things are going to work the way I want them to. And then I know, okay, if this is going to work, then the full performance happens, right? So when I was doing that performance, girl...
Yes.
Like 100 feet. Y ya estaba cansado. Se me hizo tan pesada esas botas. Pero, you know, like that's...
But that's part of the... Right. That's part of the...
Right. So this festival, this is a festival. This is not just like a gallery show, right? So this is a festival that happens outdoors and chingos de gente show up. You know, we're talking about like thousands of people. So while I'm dragging these boots, there's areas that I pause and stop and I let one or two boots loose and I leave them behind, right? Still dragging the rest and I cut them off. Dragging the rest, you know, and like cut them off until I have nothing. Now.
And then that Whitney Houston song comes on.
Yeah.
I have nothing.
Sorry.
So then after that, it became different. The performance still existed.
Damn.
But now it didn't exist with me. It existed with the public, right? One of my friends, shout out to Cristal Puente Horta, awesome photographer, artist, fashion designer from San Antonio. She sent me a text message and she's like, oh my God. She's like, you have no idea the impact that you're doing. And like, and how the symbolism behind that performance, because she was like, a brown little boy picked up that boot and was dragging it, right? Like,
oh,
this,
wow,
this boot full of concrete. So it kind of hit me, you know, it hits you because it's now, that's exactly what I'm talking about in that performance. It's talking about the expectation of carrying through with this tradition and like instilling it into somebody else, right? So that's exactly what happens, right? That was instilled in me growing up. This is the way you need to be. And this is the way you need to carry it out, right? So it's kind of like trying to let it go, but you can't.
And this is while you were wearing fucking neon lights in your vaquero hat.
I hate talking about the vaquero hat in my trunk. But I do, yeah.
Is it at night, the performance?
Yeah, so it's a night event, right? So it's called Luminaria because it's all like, things are called, it's like light based.
Mm-hmm.
But my sombrero, like neon lights, you know. I had neon lights on my boots too. Pero como que no quisieron hacer work. But yeah, so, you know, it's kind of, and I was wearing boots. I was wearing Western attire, you know, like tenía mi camiseta. Y los pantalones tenía de poliéster. You know, and it's just like doing this and this whole thing, right? And yeah, so that, you know, that's, it's crazy when we talk about that tradition and how it's so deeply rooted in us. And the expectation of like carrying it out.
And also one of the things that I love and admire is that as Latinos or as Mexicanos in this country, we supposed to carry the weight of just one type of iconography. Todos somos Huitzilopochtli, todos somos Cuatlicue, todos somos Aztecas. And right. The reality is that the development of our identities change according to region, not right. necessarily just based on borders. And you don't play with those old tropes of the empire prior for the Spanish to arrive,
right.
the Aztecs, the Mayans, which a lot of people belong to those histories in central Mexico, you know?
Right.
Instead, you're talking about something that it's more of a development of modern times.
Yes.
And you take it to your skin, like the stitching of the boots on your feet, it's a tattoo now, right?
Yeah.
You
just got that. Yeah. So in the, mm-hmm. you know, in the,
I just saw the tattoo today.
Uh-huh.
You have some nice feet, Jose.
Gracias.
Mm-hmm. Mm,
I can do a lot of things with these feet.
I know.
Like walk. And walk.
And walk. Hey.
Yeah, I was vlogging in case you guys didn't see that. Because nobody
felt it.
I know they did. Just kidding.
Yeah,
but
that
yeah,
tattoo
so,
is awesome.
Yeah, so that specific tattoo, it was for a video performance. And it was titled Cultural Reminders. So I had the, in the Western boots or like las botas, the stitching on the tip, it's called the toe medallion stitching. So I had that done on top of my feet, like, as you know, like these are cultural reminders of who I am, right?
¿Y te dolió?
No, hombre.
¿No dolió?
A mí me gusta el dolor. Y de muchos lugares también.
Okay.
Dios mío.
Just kidding.
What are you guys talking about?
What is that? So yeah, I mean, that's I did a video.
That's a great that's a great piece, and I really love the images I see of your work, and I've only seen your work through video and photo. So is that important to you, the documentation of it? And
how definitely.
That piece lives on.
Yes.
Because, you know, I know some performance artists that are like, you had to be there. Sorry, you know. Yeah. No. But
girl, let me tell you, the only like this last solo that I, solo show that I had at Press House Gallery, the only one piece that you really had to be there. I mean, I can recreate it again.
Yeah.
But I did embroidery into a wall using rope. And the embroidery was of that same stitching design on the boot, but I took up a wall in that specific, the work is called Entre Paredes Modernas y Antiguas. Mm. So it's like living between this, these two spaces, right? Like living with modern time and then living with this kind of tradition, traditional space. But yeah, like that was probably like the only one piece that you probably would have to see in person. Because all the other shit I, you know, I can box up and like put it in the trunk of my car.
Yeah.
It's interesting too, because you're, in a way, you're creating your own iconography. Like you, it's something that it's already there, but we never thought about taking it away from a bota and making this whole thing. Like that could be an abstract drawing. And then, and now it's like a performance piece. Now it's part of your like.
But it's also, you know, it's also taking that away from its masculinity.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. So that's exactly what my goal is to like destroy that. Right.
Yeah. Like they could be for everybody. Up. Right.
It needs to fuck it up. Because it's important to talk about. I mean, it's nobody talks about it, especially in the border. So I was in the Transborder Biennial at the El Paso Museum of Art. And so you show two works. One is in El Museo de Ciudad Juárez and one is in the El Paso Museum of Art, right? Porque es frontera. Oh, so for that specific exhibition, they told me, what work do you want to show where, right? And I was like, mis cintos or cinturones a huevo en Juárez. Like, it has to be there because these, this is a series of belts that I had made and they have, so like we're talking about Western belts that have the last name, right? So we kind of, we see that a lot in like Vaquero or like Norteño.
Yeah. And it's also like a souvenir sometimes when you go, right. They can make a special belt.
Yeah. So like, you know, traditionally it's like wearing this, your last name, right? And carrying your last name so people can like see.
El nombre de tu estado, Durango, Chihuahua, yes, Ua.
But
I'm very authentic.
You are?
Yeah.
So what I did with these belts is they have homophobic slurs in Spanish, right? So they all read like pinchijoto, maricón, puto, marica, mariposa, delicado, invertido. Like a lot of slurs, and they're on a wall. Because I used to always see also like the way it's also important, and it's funny because you also have to see how things are put away in the home setting, right? I used to always see my uncles put their gear like on a nail on the wall.
Yeah.
Right. So that's exactly what I did. So all these belts are hanging from a nail. But it was important for that work to be shown in Juarez because nobody talks about that. And it's important to talk about it, right? People are very receptive to the work. And they react to it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's not. I don't know. Sometimes it's funny to them. But I think when people laugh at that work, it's because they're uncomfortable. Right. So a lot of people were laughing at my belts because I have all these slurs on them. But like you can see like how
it's unsettling.
Right.
Yeah.
So for me, especially because all the terms were in Spanish, it was super important for them to be in Juarez. Right. Because there was not one belt that has a homophobic slur in English.
So with you're very regional. Your work talks a lot about the border. Your work talks a lot about Norteño culture and about Mexicanidad, which is an extension, you know, Norteño culture is an extension of Mexicanidad. And you and I have talked about how you are, in a way, struggling to have your work recognized outside of Texas. So do you think it has to do with this unsettled? Do you think it's to do unfamiliarity with it? Or you is it part of the struggle of being like a Latino artist hustling?
Don't impose that question on me, porque I'm gonna pop off and then
do it.
Y yo, I'm gonna burn bridges left and
burn
right.
Bitch. Nobody listens to this.
Exactly. Dame los cerillos. No, it's
well, we've been talking about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. Yes, my work is regional, but the population of the Latinx population in the United States is a lot bigger, right? It's a lot bigger
than
what it was before. So now we're seeing these things happen all across the United States, right? Now, the struggle that I have, I feel that struggle that I have showing my work outside of Texas is there is the, you know, it's kind of like a metropolis of art, you know, these locations. I don't want to say
the
names.
The centers.
Right?
We all know.
But you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And what ends up happening with that is that... They have their groups. If you're not in that group, like...
It's cliquey as fuck.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like Mean Girls. Like, you really... And even then, you know, like, even then, it's so fucking hard.
Yeah.
And it's hard simply because, if you're not in that clique...
Say that part again.
If you're not in that clique, like, you know, like, you're going to have a harder time getting out there.
And the problem is that, yes, those cliques take time and they develop and they hustle.
Pero sabes
but they're tied to networks. Yeah. And if you're not part of the clique, you're not tied to that network. So you're right. Outside of that scene, and that's fucked up.
You know, I know. Es que si y'all put me on the spot, lo, voy a querer hablar. Chingo. Well,
girl, this is a podcast, bitch. <know. laughs> This is the medium to do it on. I don't know why you're struggling.
Pero lo que pasa...
Let it out!
lo que pasa es que... I feel that what happens is, it's going to sound stupid as fuck when I say it, but maybe like processing it is differently, right? When I think somebody sees a contender in a way that there are people become afraid that their thunder is going to get stolen in that center.
Ooh.
Right?
It's true. Listen, I think about it this way. High school for me was a great training ground for the art world. In high school, I was a band nerd. I was also a theater nerd. I was also in the Bible club. I was also in this chemistry. Like, I was in all of these different cliques. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't just in one place. And I feel like in the art world, like you mentioned, some people just, like, they're hanging out with the chess club and that's it, right? Or they're the cheerleaders and they don't go outside of their group. And that's when you get into trouble. And that's when that kind of shit happens. Like, I make piñata art, right? I know that's minimizing my work, but that's what people see me as, the piñata guy. I know there's several other piñata artists.
Yeah.
Two big ones that I know here in Texas, and people are always sending me pictures of their work and saying, this guy's ripping you off. And I go, no, they're not. I didn't invent the fucking piñata.
Right.
Like, we can exist. How many white people do you know making the exact same paintings? And nobody says that they're ripping each other off.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. It becomes a territorial thing.
And that is white supremacy, bitch.
But us as minorities, we play with those fucking things. That's the fucking problem too, you know?
What do you mean?
Like, when people other us, we play with those victimhoods, and that's why we get cliquey. And that's why we have to fight. Some people think they need to fight harder because they need to ¿cómo se llama? Conservar ese lugar, you know what I mean? But what you're telling us is the opposite. It's like when you're actually supporting, you're creating a bigger network and it's more successful.
Yeah, and we have to look at like the macro because they want us fighting with each other. They want us to be like the only, like, I am the one piñata person.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know what
I mean? That's not right. I mean,
but also like. Like, you know when people rip your work off.
Oh, yes.
Okay,
bitch.
Like, you
that
know.
That too.
Pero, like...
And you know who I'm talking about.
Okay,
I know you're listening, bitch.
But some things is that we also need to, exactly what you're saying, pay attention to the bigger part. And that's what happened. This is why, humble brag, I'm super humble about a lot of things. I can, bitch, I can talk a lot of mad shit about pendejadas. Pero, you know what I mean? Like, I also, not only am I an artist, but also co-direct a gallery in San Antonio. Shout out to all my peers out there. Clamp Light Gallery If y'all want to, you know, you can go to the website. You can follow us. You can follow me too. Hey, you know, break. No, but anyways,
don't worry. We'll do the whole your whole roster of things.
But what happens is that Michael Anthony Garcia, who's here now outside drinking, oh no, tomando el sol. him and I met because I met him at the Mexicarte Museum when I showed there. And then we kind of built this relationship, right? And then we curated an exhibition in San Antonio at Clamp Light. And I wanted to make it a point of including as many types of different people as we could, especially the people who have not had the opportunity to exhibit work. Because people get caught up, right? People get caught up. This is hot. Yeah, I'm done. You know, like that's what happens. And I get it because I live it, right? Like I'm an artist myself, right? So this is what happens. And it pisses me off when people say, oh, this is Jose Villalobos. He's hot right now. You know, like, ay, me caga eso.
That's why I prefer to stay lukewarm all the time.
But like, this is also
like breast milk.
Yes. Have you ever tried it?
No, me?
Not bad.
Yo, I'm lactating.
It's really good for dry eyes. Okay. I learned that from Super Mama.
No way.
Oh, that's right. That's
really? Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay.
Shout out. But it's also a lesson into, again, we always say this, like looking outside of the centers.
Right.
Because that's what happens when you're just obsessed with the centers. You may become successful, but guess what? You have to be clicky in order to survive, and you forgot the peripheries, and the peripheries have amazing artists like Jesus Villalobos and Justin Favela, man.
Jesus,
you know what I'm saying?
Híjole. You just call
José,
me...
Sorry, José.
Este vato me dijo Jesús.
Es que eres como Jesús de Veracruz.
We'll edit that out. Don't worry. The disrespect.
But you know what I mean.
You're right. I think you're right. I mean, and that's academia too, bitch.
That's academia.
It's every world. And so, with that being said, I think it's time to take a break.
Yeah.
You got to go pee, huh?
No, I don't.
I can see the twinkle in your eye.
Yes,
see.
Ding.
Today's episode has been brought to you by the original Lindo Michoacán on East Desert Inn.
¿Cuál dijiste?
I said the original Lindo Michoacán on East Desert Inn in beautiful, sunny Las Vegas, Nevada.
And the best part is that you go, you order your fideo, you order your tostadas, you order your tortugas, and if you tell them that you're a listener of Latinos Who Lunch, ¿te dan cuánto, güey?
25% off your entire meal. Can you believe it?
I can, because I've done it, and I've eaten there several times a week, so I can get my free meal at the end of the week.
Okay! Lindo Michoacán.
Save water.
Drink margaritas. So, we have a special commercial right now. I've been hanging out with my new friend. You want to introduce yourself, please?
Hello, my name is Jake Navarro.
Jake Navarro is here, and... he is an up-and-coming podcaster.
Yes.
And so he's been thinking about doing a podcast. And full disclosure, I'm making him do this so that there's no excuses and he has to start a podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate that shit.
He's been helping me so much here in Austin. He helped me put up this huge installation.
Oh, God. It was fun.
It was amazing working with you. I really appreciate your work ethic. He was with me every day. One day, we spent like, 36 hours together?
37.
Damn. Okay.
I was counting, bitch.
I guess you're counting. But tell us about the podcast you're starting in 1 minute. Go.
So it's called Juice with Jake and Jake. It's my friend that I met here in Austin when we both moved and worked at a marketing company. That company did a great job at hiring awesome people. So I found this, you know, new friend, and he's moving back to his hometown in Boston. And we decided to create something that we both love, and promotion of artists and people across the country, and connecting with others that aren't like ourselves, connecting and making those really important conversations on a new platform, which is ours. And then at the end, giving that credit where it's due to people of the week, right? So giving that juice to artists or people that we meet like you. So you'd be getting the juice this week, Bobby.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, that's basically it. Just really creating new conversations. And I feel like there's a need for having good vibes out there and more good vibes. So that's what we want to put out into the universe and just keep it going, you know?
Live, love, laugh.
Live, no laugh, seamos, loving it, girl.
Live, laugh, loving it.
No seamos envidiosos.
Exactly. Right. So, again, the podcast is going to be called
Juice with Jake.
Juice with Jake and Jake.
Yep.
Damn, alliteration, so there important.
I'm a literary bitch.
Okay, time's up. Bye.
Bye.
And we're back. Hi.
¿Ya le cambiaste el agua a las aceitunas?
¿Cuáles?
Man, yeah, so we were just talking about clicks and the art world and how it works. But girl, I really admire your work ethic also. And just, I always see you doing something. And, you know, you got that big old grant that I've applied for several times. And that, all of them. You get all of them, girl. They love you. No, that's amazing. But, you know,
eat it.
But I kind of want to get into that a little bit because a lot of artists always ask me, like, how do you get these opportunities? And it's not like, girl, we're not just sitting around. Like, we are applying to residencies all the time, applying to grants all the time. You have to put in that work in order to be nominated and to be recognized. And so can you tell me just a little bit, you don't have to go into it, but like what kind of things you do to get those opportunities?
Bueno, me levanto en la mañana, me despierto, abro los ojos, y luego me pongo los calzones. ¿Te crees?
You don't wear underwear, bitch.
Sometimes. It depends. If I'm feeling cold, I'll put them on. Just kidding.
You need that support.
No, people fail. I think a lot of people fail to see this part, right? People fail to see the fact that, gross, because when you're an artist and you say you're an artist, la gente, can you draw me something? You know, like,
oh, girl.
Right? Like, you're just, you know, on their time.
I always be like, well, here's my rate sheet.
Do you have
I
it printed?
Per day,
can we fax it?
Yeah, exactly.
No, but people fail to see the fact that being a working artist and saying working is, I mean, very important because as an artist, it's not only creating work. It's not only showing the work. It's a bunch of other shit, right? So we're talking about applying to shit such as grants or shows, open calls, residencies, a lot of things. For the Joan Mitchell grant, shout out to the Joan Mitchell Foundation.
Hey.
I was very honored to get that grant this in 2018 at the end of the year. It's a $25,000 unrestricted grant.
Okay, you're taking us out after this, bitch.
Yeah, sí. ¿A dónde vamos? Strippers.
Yeah, no. We're going to treasures.
Treasure Island, girl.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Treasure Island.
I'll take you to that island.
Damn, ahí va a estar la pirata.
With a peg leg.
La Catalina queer. Yes.
No, you know, I was very honored to get that grant, but that... Just to give a little bit of people insight on the Joan Mitchell Foundation, you have to get nominated. So you have to get nominated before anything. So they get, I don't know how many nominators, and then from all those nominators, they select artists. And from all those artists, you apply. After that, there's a selection round. And only 25 artists nationwide get chosen. Mm-hmm. And then you get the $25,000 each. Let me tell you a story.
And that's when I got the cut, bitch, and you got it, and I didn't.
Let me tell you a story.
Yeah.
When I wasn't even going to apply.
It's just an honor to be nominated.
Right? It was an honor to be a runner-up at RuPaul's Drag Race.
Seventh alternate.
Bitch. No. So when I got nominated, I kind of just put it on the back burner. And a lot of reason is I felt discouraged in my own part. That's my own fault as an artist. I would compare myself to other people. And I said, I'm never going to make it. I'm never going to get that right. So there was this doubt in my mind. I was like, ay, why are they going to pick me? You know what I mean?
Right.
Porque yo, ay, seguramente, right? Yo, el juareño se me está saliendo. Ay. pero, ay, juareño is an ugly word.
It is.
Sorry. But, not sorry.
Why is that a bad word?
Because it's juarense, not juareño.
Yeah.
It's chihuahueño instead of chihuahuense. Uh-huh.
So it's like a dog.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
That is so rude.
I'm sorry, but it's just used. Like,
where's Deborah Olivas from? She was just hot.
I have no idea.
She's from like Ensenada or something.
Yeah, right, something yeah, like yeah. that. Yeah, yeah.
But is that imposter?
Imposter syndrome? Yeah, I think that's what it is. And girl, I applied, submitted all my work, submitted everything. Y luego me dieron. I didn't know. They didn't say anything when they were announced. People, I got the phone call, and they were like, "Oh, we're just calling you to let you." Well, first of all, I got nominated for 2 grand. So Cisneros Foundation. From I think Miami, and I applied to that one too, and they were like, "No, ma'am," right? And it was an $8,000 I think grant, and they're like, "No, you didn't make it." Whatever. I think after that, I was like, "Fuck no, I'm not gonna get the Joan Mitchell," right? Mm-hmm. Like, whatsoever. Pasaron como dos semanas, me llegó la llamada, and I'm like, "Hello," I'm like, "Hi, this is so and so from Joan Mitchell Foundation, just calling to let you know that." You're one of the recipients this year.
Holy shit.
Bitch. I lost it. Oh yo, I see you put her on mute. Y grité.
You texted me, I remember.
Girl, yes, I did. Yeah, right? I was like, bitch, guess what the fuck happened? Yeah. Yeah. So they selected my work. Obviously, somebody... That's also, you know, like it's a job in its own too. Like these people out there, curators, right? They have... Like, that's their job, is to look and observe and see all these artists, right?
But this is such a good lesson, because you should not be discouraged to work and to apply to things if you're not working in those art centers that you, Jose, and you, Fabi, are a testament that you can build a career in the arts. Against all odds, we're Latinos, we're not supposed to be artists, we are not in the center, so we're not going to make it into the galleries. It's going to take more work, you're going to have more battles, but at the end, it's so much more satisfying.
Yeah. And I also want to talk about it, because a lot of people think that things... Yes, I will admit, I do get a lot of opportunities, people just come to me with them. And
I would say
this. But it's not...
But it wasn't always like that.
It wasn't always like that. And it's also because we are always out there.
Because we're working.
We're always doing something. So people know that we're going to do the job. We're going to get the job done. But I also want to let people know, like, most of the grants that I've ever applied to, I haven't gotten.
Okay.
And I just want people to know that the artists that I admire more are the ones that try to receive grants. They try to get art shows. They try to do this, and they usually don't get them, but they just keep going.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's the right timing, the right jurors on the committee, the right whatever, and you get the opportunity. And I'm just saying this because I'm tired of people complaining about not getting things, and they don't realize
that, it's true. Because
the people that are at the top, they're working every day to get there.
Yeah, because I've applied. You know, like I've applied to things.
Yes,
and that's also where part of the discouragement comes. Into it, right? And sometimes you just, you know, you kind of like, ni modo, you know, like you have to just treat it as whatever. Just keep trying and trying and trying and trying and trying. And it'll happen. Like, it'll happen. And I speak this to all the, you know, artists who are just starting out. It's a work. It's your work ethic that counts. It's a job. You know, and that's what I was going to go back into, is that a lot of people don't realize that part, is that not only did I come to Austin to meet y'all, right? Like, I was honored to meet both of you in the same space.
Thank you so much.
Gracias, gracias.
I take it back.
That was correct.
And we delete this conversation.
No, thank you. That means a lot. There's so many people that, I mean... There's like 3 or 4 people that came from different cities in Texas to visit us. And that, to me, that means so much. So thank you for taking the time to do that.
But it's not only that. It's coming out here. I knew that Coca had just curated an exhibition, right? Those are opportunities for people. Like, that is our job as artists, is to go out there and fucking network.
All of the openings.
You have to. You have to. You have to do it. Like, that's... Girl, I used to hate talking. Fuck, I hated talking to people and to the public. Pero you warm up, take a few shots, yeah, and that's, you know, like you and maybe snort some, you know, some Sweet and Low from Denny's.
Stevia for me.
I, all natural.
Uh-huh. Austin's changed me.
You're so organic.
Thank you.
But that's important, you know, like that we can't, at least I can't. I know this from what I've seen and have I experienced. I can't just be here and have these opportunities wait to be handed to me. I've worked for them. And that's what I want people to know, is that fuck your couch. But like, I've worked for this shit, you know, and I keep working at it, and I'm still working at it. And todo lo que me ha pasado no es porque estoy sentado esperando, or because I know a connection, or because, I mean, yes, connections are part of networking, right? But, you know, nothing is just given.
Right.
At least not to me.
You got to support the community if you want them to support you.
And be true to yourself. Like, here we have an artist that is not giving up to other iconographies and other ideas about what's supposed to be Latino. You're going to fucking take botas vaqueras to the rest of the world, and that's fucking beautiful. And that's important, that just be true to yourself and to your story and to your narrative, and you can make it, you know? You can make it. Yeah. But as minorities, nos va a costar un chingo, pero we can do it, you know?
Yeah, it just takes time and effort. It takes work, right? You know? Yes. And it takes unity.
Unity!
But it does. Like, that's exactly what it is. Like, we need to be united together to be included in the spaces, you know? And it's not included because we're Latino, not included because we're queer. I'm tired of that. And I get it. Yes, it's a safe space, and it's important to have both. I understand that. But also, it's about getting into a space because the value
of your work.
Of your work and your work ethic and who you are as a person.
A motherfucking,
do you know,
man.
What I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And with that being said and understood,
yes,
I think that's a good place to stop.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jose, for being on our show.
No, thank you. This is
an honor for us, for real. I mean,
really, like, we both love your work.
When we first saw your work, we're like, have you seen this guy's work? We were geeking.
Me están dando las mentiras.
Wait, yo te lo he dicho varias veces.
Take a compliment, bitch. Say thank you.
I can't. I'm an artist.
I know. You're amazing. You're beautiful. You look like Linda Evangelista. You're a model.
Yeah, it really is an honor to have you in the
podcast.
Yeah,
for real.
And look out, because I truly, truly believe that you're about to take over the world. So watch out.
Girl.
You will.
Okay.
Where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me on MySpace.
Okay.
On MocoSpace. Girl, MocoSpace.
But so what's your live journal?
You can find me on Grindr, bitch. Can you imagine if I said that? No, me divorcian. Pero no, you can find me. A lot of my work, Instagram has been kind of the new business card. So you can find me on Instagram at Jose Villalobos Art. And it's Jose Villalobosart.
Okay.
Okay. And my website, josevialobosart.com. También.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you have anything else to say, Babalito?
I'm just very, again, honored and excited that we got to meet you. And I hope this is one of many interviews, because I feel like there's so many other things that we need to get into,
girl.
But there's just no time.
This is not the end of things.
This is part one.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we say that a lot.
We do. I was just thinking that.
We don't really...
I don't say it if I don't mean it. If it doesn't happen, that's different.
Yeah. So that's part one of 99.
Capítulo uno. We're Locatora Radio now. Okay, I got to go catch a plane. As always, you can visit us at latinoswholunch.com. Please write your letters and we might read them on a future episode. Ask lwlpod@gmail.com. If you have a moment and you want to help us out, you can review us on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. 5 stars.
5 stars solamente.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are. And
visibility leads to representation. As you know, representation matters.
Today's episode was produced by Justin Favela and Emmanuel Ortega. The music you're hearing right now is by the band Brownout. Oh, they're from Austin. I'm Fabi Fav.
And I'm Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao.
Bye. Hasta luego, muchachos de Chihuahua.
Ua, ua.
Yeah.